sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up.
Okay, like I usually do, I'm going to share a poem. Well, it's a rap verse, but I call them poems. This is one of the few times I feel the need to say trigger warning. Triggered warning for the entire episode, because we'll be dealing with the theme. There will be a lot of discussion about the theme of suicide. So, trigger warning. I feel like making this trigger warning. So, here we go. All my life, I've been considered as the worst. Lying to my mother, even stealing out of purse. Crime after crime, from drugs to extortion. I know my mother wished she got a fucking abortion. She don't even love me like she did when I was younger. Sucking on her chest just to stop my fucking hunger. I wonder if I died, where tears come to her eyes. Forgive me for my disrespect. Forgive me for my lies. My baby mother's 8 months and her little sister's too. Who's to blame for both of them? Nah, nigga, not you. I swear to God I want to just slit my wrist and end this bullshit. Throw the magnum to my head, threaten to pull shit. And squeeze until the bed completely red. I'm glad I'm dead. A worthless fucking Buddha head.
Message.
The stress is building up. I can't believe. Suicide is on my fucking mind. I want to leave. I swear to God, I feel like death is fucking calling me. But you wouldn't understand. Nigga, talk to me, please. Yeah, that was a fucked up in. Yeah, okay, that's, we'll get to it. Okay, let me do my regular, welcome to another episode. Welcome, bienvenue. A notre episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. B Blizzard, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Before I start, I want to remind you, returning listeners, that this podcast, Shut Up Podcast, is still protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on March 12, 2023 daylight savings times. Basically, a white man stole an hour from us for this weekend. So I'm doing it on the weekend where I have 1 hour less to enjoy, courtesy of the white man. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Yeah, man. Okay, let's get things going. I have this. Yeah, boom. Starting my timer. Here we go. All right. Intro portion. I took a shot of Jameson before starting the show. Even though this pharmacist was telling me how I should start limiting my alcohol intake to 3 times a week, I'm like, God damn. Something about blood pressure. Anyway, whatever. But, this is Sunday. Should I count this as my first week or my last week? But that's the only alcohol I've had this week. That's only where I'm going with this. I'm acknowledging to myself that I've consumed beverages, and then now I'm down to two more times. But if we start on Monday, then I got three more times, but whatever. That's not my point. But shout out to the good people of Ireland and their beverage for sharing their beverage of Jameson to the rest of us. All right, okay. Quick intro. Before I do a little history, start with some history, I wanted to say for today's episode, what's up with today's title will be covered in the final thought. All right. For those unfamiliar, there are two sections to this podcast, to an episode, usually, traditionally, well, technically three acts. First one is my introduction. Second one is news and random thoughts. And the last one is final thoughts. Okay. So, all right. So, introduction. So, real quick, before I go off on another tangent, three things to remember that happened this week. First one was the death anniversary of Biggie Smalls, which is why I started out with today's episode with the poem I read, or the verse that I read was from his track Suicidal Thought from his Ready to Die album. And I'll elaborate on this choice in the final thought section of this episode. But yeah, March 9th. Every hip-hop fan, worth their salt. I can't say everyone, because not everyone liked Biggie. Most of us did. But anyway, my point is, March 9th, and it was just easier to remember because shout-out to Cannabis, who just had a verse who kept saying, because the greatest of all time died on March 9th, and that shit just got recorded in our head. Let's just say if people remember, most of us remember Biggie's death anniversary is a lot because of that verse. But I'm not complaining. Yeah, I like to think about March 1st, even though it's the day after International Women's Day. It's a little weird. Yeah, going from International Women's Day to, like, bumping some Biggie verse. You know, I'm overthinking this right now. But, yeah, I like to think of March 9th, wearing my Biggie outfit. Even though I was a disciple of Pac. That was how much of a fan I was. I consider myself a disciple. Even though I felt he went a little crazy with this whole, you know, fuck Biggie verse, fuck Bad Boy shit, you know, towards the end. so maybe I wasn't that great of a disciple. I want a disciple who fell asleep while Jesus attacked him. So I was with Pac to the end, but not completely to the end. I started to questioning our prophet. I'm like, yeah, do we really need another rap track against Biggie? But anyway, that's my point. My point is, even though I was a dedicated Pac fan, I still had love for Biggie. Like, I acknowledged the dude was talented. He was he was talented, man. Black excellence on wax. And yeah, and I like to think about him on his birthday and on his death anniversary. Well, mainly on his death anniversary, because the greatest of all time died on March 9th. That song is stuck in my head. And again, like I said, in final thoughts, I will share some thoughts about this year's reflection on Biggie. Okay, and last, just a quick history. Something else that happened on March 9th, 1990, was the movie House Party was released. And I'm trying to remember if I saw that in theaters. That's right, I'm that old. But yes, House Party with Kid and Play, one of the greatest, if hip-hop related movie, so to speak, ever to be made. Well, it came out on March 9th, 1990. Also this week, we remember is, God damn it, where are my notes? Yeah, is New Jack City. Yes. Am I my brother's keeper? Yeah. Too many quotes to take from. But yes, that came out. That was released on March 9th. Let me just make sure. Release date. Wait, what? What? Oh, wow. This is weird. Okay. It was release date January 17, 1991. Oh, Sun Film Festival. But officially released in theater on March 8, 1991. And I believe I did see that in theaters. Yes, I did. And I remember that scene where, spoiler alert, where Nino died at this black community group, discussion group that I had. We talked about it, how We weren't supposed to clap at his scene where he dies, even though he was a piece of shit. But I don't know, man. Black people's stories are very complicated, man. It's not as simple as good and evil. Well, except for white folks, you know what I mean? Yeah, except for white folks. Yeah, I have to remind myself that I have a right to be unapologetically black on this episode on my own podcast. But yeah, man. But no, what I'm saying is, yes, Nito Brown did play a villain, but the real villain was the white man and the government who brought crack in the hood. And Nito Brown was just a oh my god. The whole point to this was March 8, 1991. New Jack City was released in theaters. I do remember seeing it. And March 8, 1991. And what was my other point? It was a good movie. That's the only point I was trying to make. It was a good movie. All right. Okay. All right, boys and girls. Let me jump into news and random thoughts. Let's jump. So, Act 2. And before I start Act 2, I got to do this here. Here we go. There we go. All right. Another thing I do when I play that when I go from different act is I put up a timer. It reminds me to be mindful of the time, because trust me, I can talk your ears off. I go on a motherfucking tangent, and then by the end of the episode, I'm like, fuck, I was supposed to talk about toast. I hate that. I have a whole rundown sheet, and I don't respect it. Anyways, yeah, in a perfect world, in an ideal world, time would just be, I'd give a middle finger to the time, but I kind of need y'all to listen. I'm kind of hoping, to gain some listeners, and I don't know, it's moments like these that I'm like, that's why I admire people like Kim Jong-un, because, he doesn't have to respect any rules about public speaking, man. That motherfucker, all you need to know is there's a soldier with a machine gun to your head, and as your supreme leader, I want to know what you think of my presentation skills. Now remember, I'm sensitive to criticism. Sir, supreme leader, I thought you talked too long. Blah, blah. All right, okay, yeah. Where's your family? Where do they live again? Okay, well, they can get these bullets too. Okay, yeah. All right, okay. Where was I? Okay, first thing first. So in the last episode I put out, it's amazing I forget the titles of my own episode. Is that bad that I don't, as a podcaster, I have to look it up? I mean, I do consume a bit of, yes, cautious because I'm cursed. But that's not what I want to talk. In the last episode, episode 59... Last episode today, okay. I did talk about a little segment on International Women's Day. Oh, right. So there's two thoughts that were left out. The first one is something I discovered on, I found on TikTok. And the only point to me playing this thing, this clip, is it just reminded me of the hopelessness. That was my major takeaway of this video I'm about to play. The hopelessness of conveying the value of International Women's Day, Black History Month, explaining that to white dudes. Like, for me, like, you know, for me, like, there's just this, when I think about these messages and conveying it to these people, it just feels hopeless. Not pointless, but hopeless. Maybe pointless, but just hopeless. But anyways, this sister just, when I share shit from TikTok, a content creator from TikTok, it's less about TikTok. TikTok could go fuck themselves. It's the content creator that I enjoy. And most of the time, they just explain shit, thoughts that I didn't have the words to say. So in this particular category, it's a helpful explainer on how we do have International Men's Day. All right, you know what? And I'll play and I'll tell you who the content creator is afterwards.
International Women's Day? Why don't we have International Men's Day?
We do. It's November 19th.
Oh.
Maybe you don't actually care about having a day. You're just used to everything being about you.
Maybe.
Whether it's white people wanting a White History Month, straight people wanting a Straight Pride Month, or men wanting a Men's History Month, it all comes from the same thing: a fundamental misunderstanding of history and a sense of entitlement that results from privilege. When you benefit from systems of oppression and you're afforded unearned power and advantages, you have privilege. Privilege can completely distort your worldview. You may subconsciously You may subconsciously believe that people like you deserve more access, resources, and respect. At the same time, you may be conditioned to ignore the fact that people who are different from you are suffering from the oppression you benefit from. Privileged people can experience oppression, but it's not because of their privileged identities. For example, a straight person may experience oppression, but not because they are straight. If you struggle with historically oppressed communities having their own day, week, or month of celebration, check yourself and your privilege. Days and months of celebration for historically marginalized groups wouldn't be necessary if we didn't have to correct for present and historical marginalization. Remember, it's not about you, and being uncomfortable is not the same thing as being oppressed. Smarter in seconds.
Shout out to Blair Imani. Yeah, Imani. She's the content creator for this beautiful, this wonderful, intelligent, insightful clip that I just shared with you all. Again, details, notes, where to find her will be in the show notes. And I don't know. I won't go in. Yeah, you know what? Because I have more items to go through on my rundown list, I'm just going to say, because A, I can't say anything any better than she said it. And two, I love the message, you know? It's just, I'm sure there's someone, I talk about the hopelessness of reaching out to white dudes, but for me, I'm thinking of everyone who won't hear it. But I'm sure, even though I think about those people, I'm sure there's someone who heard this and being like, oh, shit, who she managed to reach. Only because I feel like, you know, she got better vocabulary than I do. But, you know, with that said, shout out to Blair Bowdy. Well said. All right, okay. Let's jump to second thing I wanted to say about International Women's Day that I didn't get a chance to say on the last episode is I remember having a conversation during my unenlightened days when I was getting closer to being an enlightened person about, let's say, femininity, patriarchy, feminism, and how black community, we've been taking black women for granted and their contributions. Mankind, we could say we've been taking women for granted and their contribution. There's this another content creator on TikTok who actually posted something about that made me realize how the only advantage men have over women is physical strength. That's it. Sure, we're able to do a lot, but in terms of, you know, equality, women being able to do the exact same thing that men can do, they've proved it once and for all. Anyways, so getting back to I remember having a conversation with someone, and we were trying to reflect on, think about women we respected that weren't models or porn stars. And not to say that porn stars, models don't deserve any respect, but I'm saying women who we respected for their intellect, for their courage, for character strength, for contribute, you know what I mean? Like for the same shit that we would, we usually respect other men. And we drew blanks. And I remember drawing a blank. And, but I should have been ashamed of myself even more because as a black dude, fuck, there's a long list of women I could have listed. And I bring this up because I came across this after I published the last show. Something that came on my feed, and I wish it came before. But whatever, it came on my feed, and it's by one of my favorite Twitter users. They're called African Archives. And in quote, fuck it, I'll do it. Black women, quote for black women goes, and this tweet that I like goes, black women are routinely erased from public memory and historical narrative of resistance. Black women powered the civil rights movement, but rarely became its stars. This was posted on International Women's Day, but I didn't mention that on Selma, but this tweet just goes into details. And I remember just scrolling in the thread, and she was just putting out name, Aunt Polly Jackson, was an escaped slave who worked as an agent to the Underground Railroad, helping others escape. She was known for fighting off slave catchers with, butcher knife and a kettle of boiling water. God damn. So yeah, we salute you, Harriet Tubman. She did names I could have, I should have, that should have came up. Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth. What else? A statue of La Mulatresse Solitude, who is in 1802, helped lead a slave revolt while 8 months pregnant in Guadeloupe. God damn, pregnant. Look, based on what I know about pregnancy, fuck that. That's enough for me to quit work. But yeah, shit we just take for granted. Queen Nanny of the Maroons, Ashanti, woman who fought and freed over 1,000 enslaved Africans in Jamaica. Who else? By the early 70s, women made up the majority of the member of the U.S. Black Panther Party. See, what's interesting is I grew up as a teenager, Black Panthers, after I was done with playing with toys. After Transformers, after Spider-Man, my heroes were the Black Panther movement. But it's funny is I only thought of Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton. Only those two. What I didn't know, only found out later growing up, is how those two would have been nothing without the women who contributed to the movement. But that doesn't get talked about. Again, the link to this tweet will be in the show notes. Mae Mallory was an activist during the Civil Rights Movement. Who else? Claudia Jones, journalist. Daisy Bates, civil rights activist, newspaper publisher, and there's many names I could have strictly, as a black dude, if you ever ask women who you respect, you should have a fucking long list. But hey, I'm gonna end it with there. Yeah, we should have a long list. I want to send probably a shout out to my cousin Moo. Did I say probably? Yeah, to my cousin Moo. She did a play, Shame on Me. And she was part of a play, and it was about the women who were involved in the Haitian Revolution. And she gave out a whole bunch of names, and it was just like, it was amazing, man. It was amazing. The only thing I did say in the last episode is I talked about how when I finally started to like focus on black women's contribution to the struggle was after the George Zimmerman verdict. And the Mike Brown around that time. And I found myself noticing the women who were on the front lines of all peaceful protests, like in the front. And I was thinking about all the times that I've been to a peaceful protest, to a protest, whatever, right? And I'm nowhere close to the police. I'm very far. I'm like in the back. In case they start shooting, I'm like, I need a head start because I'm a big dude and I'm in bad shape. And I'm in no position for any physical altercation. So I admire the fact that these women are willing to have the passion to stand in front and, fuck the police. Not to say, at the peaceful protest yelling, fuck the police. But I'm just saying, like, they're near the front lines, down for whatever. Not thinking about their physical safety like I am. So I admire that. It's something to be admired, man. And again, man, this is my extended Happy International Women's Day segment. And mentioning some other names that I could have mentioned. Yeah, and bringing up names, shouting out some names that I should have, would have, could have mentioned on the last episode. All right, okay. Okay, let's get through this, B. Two more items. Okay, sheer coincidence, I have to share this article. So on the last episode, I believe I did talk about, or maybe it was the previous one, I talked about the Chris Rock special and how I was annoyed that I was reacting more to the reaction than I was to the actual special. But with that said, of course, the internet's been, everyone's been having their opinion, like Tupac would say, everyone opened their mouth with a motherfucking opinion. But the talks that did matter is a piece came out by People Magazine, and it says that Jada Pinkett Smith had no part in Chris Rock and Will Smith drama, says source. So that's an important point people need to make. Okay, first I'm going to start by saying that I don't think we are helping these two brothers heal. And when I say heal, I don't mean having a kumbaya moment, but I think there's something that could be learned from this altercation, from this beef. It's a tragedy that happened, right? But like in true black people manner, as we do, turning lemon into lemonade. I'm saying there's a lot that could be learned from this, from what happened. Now, making peace could probably mean Chris Rock and Will Smith never speak to each other, you know, leave it at that. Or these two brothers come together. Again, I'm not saying it should happen. I'm saying we can learn from the. Okay, I guess what I'm saying is, if these two manage to come through this situation and making peace the same way Jay-Z and Nas did after their beef, the same way we all wish Biggie and Pac made peace after their beef, the same way any of us who had beef, you know, came out being better person than they were before they got into the, I was going to say entanglement, before this conflict, I'm saying there's a lot we could possibly learn from this shit. Because there's a lot, okay. But one thing I want to clear out is that, this fucking meat, the meat is not really helping this situation. Everyone's taking sides. And I'm looking at the situation. It doesn't have to be one of those situations where everyone takes sides. Like, fuck. Maybe there's something. I believe there's something we can gain, we can learn from this shit. Why Chris made that joke. And whether he regrets making that joke or not. Why did Will Smith react the way he reacted? And whether, and according to his apology, he regrets reacting the way he did. Like, I think that apology by Will, assuming it's sincere, if Chris gets to a point where he could say, you know what, I accept your apology. I'm not saying he should. I'm not saying I'm getting that. But I'm saying is a relationship was broken. And if it ever gets repaired, there's a lot of shit we can learn from it. And anyways, this headline was just talking about how Jada Pinkett Smith had no part in Chris Rock's and Will Smith's drama. Yes, a lot of people like to say that, yo, Will Smith did it to, you know, to protect his woman. And she's saying, no, this shit had nothing to do with me. Chris did in his special say, yo, you know, it's her fault and all that. But I'm realizing, nah, man, look, there's like this saying, this is like the psychological concept. If you hate something, it's not that thing you hate. There's something about it. Like if you dig deeper into it, you would realize the real reason why you have beef with. Okay. Again, this is where I can talk your ears off. But I'm just saying, I'll leave the article in the show notes, but I do like the fact that Jada Pinkett has said, yo, that beef between these two has nothing to do with me. It wasn't Will trying to protect this woman. Chris Rock did make his joke, but she wasn't sitting there going, oh, kill that nigga, or anything like that. Nah, man, that beef is strictly between those two men. And I kind of wish the world would look at it that way, but, you know, we don't live in that kind of world, you know what I mean? And I'm a dreamer. I'm a fucking dreamer. All right, last item is, this one just is actually just showed up on my rundown sheet. And I'm going to play a clip of Tucker Clarkson? Tabarnak, c'est quoi son nom, man? En plus, c'est en français. Non, c'est en anglais, but...
Attractive land.
Hold on a second. Okay, it goes Tucker... Carlson, sorry. This tweet showed up recently, and the guy says, Tucker Carlson, fuck that guy's name, fuck his name. The Fox News explique pourquoi le Québec est sa province préférée. I'll translate it, even though I'm assuming this audience is bilingual, but here we are. Tucker Carlson explains why Quebec is his favorite province. And it's kind of like a backhanded compliment. But you know what? That's not the point. I'm going to play the whole shit and then share a quick thought on it. Here we go.
And in northern Quebec.
100%.
100%.
Rewind.
A huge tract of land in northern Quebec.
100%.
100%.
I don't know about Quebec. See, rip on Quebec with you too.
No, it's my favorite province.
Oh, really?
Eh? Why?
Yeah, maybe that's the issue then, right?
I'll tell you why. because the French, super annoying, obviously impossible to deal with. Oh, you must speak our language. Your language? Nobody speaks your language. Like, nobody cares about French anymore. It's no longer the lingua franca. It's like you're an empire not only in decline, but it's vanished. You're Rome. Like, you don't exist. Okay. So there's that. But the good news about the French is they actually have, what do they call it, self-respect. Like, they actually think they have something worth preserving. That's why they're so silly about their language. Oh, you must say it in French. True. Like, subtitles in ink. And the whole thing is insane. But it suggests that they really care on some level. Like, they're not bitches. Like, a lot of, no offense, a lot of the Anglos in Canada are like, okay, you can invade us. Yeah. The French are like, no, we're French. Like, you can only invade us if you speak French.
Yeah.
And I just like that.
I agree.
And they're like, again, they're hard to deal with, but they have balls. I've flown all through the maritime. You know, I fish, so I've flown in little planes all around
Canada.
Where'd
you go? Newfoundland?
Yeah, in Labrador, you know, in northern Ontario and a bunch of your states, which I think are called provinces.
Mm-hmm. Asshole.
I don't participate in that. But with your kilometers and millimeters and like, oh, this is a fake measure.
Foreign language. I know.
Can't even measure anything. I agree. It's like, whatever. No, those are pounds and miles, but whatever. But I've flown all over in these little planes, very sketchy planes. And if you get an Anglo pilot, it's like, can't fly today because the weather, eh? You know, the weather. And French pilots are like tossing the cigarette out the window, throwing on the scarf. They're like, we are not afraid of the weather.
So
the weather is transitory. Here today, gone tomorrow. But we,
the French
persevere.
Are more like alpha.
They're alpha in their weird.
There we go. Sorry, if I'm laughing, I wasn't laughing at fucking Tucker. Tuck these nuts. Yeah, tuck these nuts, nigga. Area. I wasn't laughing at what he was saying. I was laughing at, because I just Googled Full Send Podcast, and I wanted to know if they were a Canadian podcast, but apparently they're a comedy podcast. And where can I get, who is on, where can I get more details about these? Holy shit, yeah. And I just realized that I just promoted this. I mean, you know what? I respect the fact that these motherfuckers created content that people who don't listen to their podcast will listen to. So that's like a win for them. And yeah, my intention wasn't to promote their podcast. But my only intention, what I do like about this clip is, one, Tucker, tuck these nuts, Clarkson, said something I've always said about French Canadians. Yes, they do have balls. Yes, them motherfuckers are ready to die. When these niggas showed up to the convoy, when I started to hear that French accent at that convoy protest, was it last year? And I'm like, fuck, now we got a problem. Because he's right, it's true. Quebec, as a protest group, them niggas are willing to die. They're dangerous. They are like... Call on the National Guards, man. These dudes are willing to. They're as bad as us after a police shooting, you know. But they'll protest, you know, the French language and shit like that. But yes, no, he is right about them being like, maybe they take it from their ancestors, their French ancestors, and you know, and the whole French Revolution and shit like that. Yeah, them niggas love to scrap. They it's Friday, time for a fucking protest. That's so true. I'll give them that. And it's so funny how Tucker Clarkson is like saying, yeah, these guys are, you know, they're annoying, but they got balls, you know. But my favorite part about this shit is how he fucking put these French crackers in their place. He reminded them of the hierarchy of white supremacy. And it's like the English on top and you motherfucking French are number twos. Which brings me to my point about why French Canadians are so mad and can be so racist. It's because they hate. It's a pure reflection of racism, man. They hate being on that number two status of white folks. They hate it, and they can't take it out on the English, so they take it out on everyone below them. It's just so beautiful what this racist white dude was saying, is because he was reminding French people of the hierarchy of white supremacy. It's like, yeah, you're white. Yes, you're better than these blacks, these browns, these indigenous, and you're better than your women. Yeah, but you're not better than us. And that's fucking white supremacy for you. It's like being content and not content with the second prize. Second prize. Okay, sure, you're not rich, but at least you're better than these niggas. That's what racism is. And the other thing I loved is how how Tuck These Nuts Carlson did to these to French people what French people do to us blacks. He just hears a French accent, he just hears the French language, and he assumes that you're Parisian, right? French people, I say French people, white people do the same thing to us. They see a black skin and they assume you're African. I don't give a fuck if you're Haitian. I don't give a fuck if you're from Canada. I don't give a fuck if you're from Baltimore. Go back to Africa. I love how he just said, if it wasn't for this white supremacy shit, I'd be telling you frog motherfuckers to go the fuck back to France. I love it, man. I love it. Anyway, I'm just saying, I grew up with French people, and, I've brought this up several times, and if there's one thing that's bothered me about these French dudes, these French folks, is not realizing that we are a greater ally to them than all of white people are to them than white people. But no, and that's how fucked up white supremacy is. It's a drug. It's a disorder. It's got white folks convinced that, yo, ain't nothing better as a human being than to be white. If you're not white, you're not right. It's got them drugged that their whiteness is the most important part about their humanity. It's got them blinded from seeing, oh shit, that person who doesn't look like me is cooler to me than that person who does look like me. It's a scam. That's really what I'm trying to say. It's a fucking scam. I should feel sorry for white people and white supremacy, but that motherfucking thing is too toxic. To me, it's dangerous to me than it is to, it's dangerous. It's so toxic that I got to treat you like you got a cancer, contagious cancer. Like I'm seeing you rot in that bed. Want to help you out, but fuck that. If I touch you, I'm going to burn. I'm just saying. This whole segment that's talking about is more a discouragement that you're hearing more than laughter. But, you know, here we are. And this, boys and girls, concludes the news and random thoughts of today's episode. Now we're going to jump to the final thought of this podcast. And what is it, on a Sunday? And try to salvage the rest of my 1-hourless weekend. All right. Okay. So here we go. Final thoughts. Okay. Fuck it. At this point, there's no timer, right? Okay. Let's start with first item. The greatest of all time died on March 9th. And every year I like to think about, I don't know. I have a unique, usually I always have some kind of thought. Like I'll play some Biggie. I play his first album more than I play anything else. His Ready to Die album. And I have some thoughts. And this year I find myself thinking about, well, three things. One is, today's title was, I went with a fucking worthless Buddha head. And that's from his track, Suicidal Thoughts. Suicidal Thoughts, I just realized, is my favorite song he's created. I love all his songs. Who Shot Ya, Hypnotize, Juice. I love all his songs. But Suicidal Thought is the one that stands out to me the most. And because I feel like it's the one track where, like Tupac, like a lot of Tupac's track, he pours out his soul. He shows a vulnerability to his audience. He uses he's a gifted rapper, but this is the track where he says, yo, the album is Ready to Die. It's talking about Ready to Die, and he ends with how he's thinking about how he's having suicidal thoughts. He doesn't do it, but I heard, what was it, Chris Lambert on one of his podcasts. I remember he said, I don't think it's normal for, I don't think you can call yourself human and where you don't have days where you do have suicidal thoughts. Whether you act on it is a different thing, but I'm sure a lot of us have considered, have thought about. I guess maybe part of why I like that track is because exactly that. It because I used to be, not ashamed, but I used to be scared of those thoughts. I used to acknowledge it. I used to pretend that it didn't cross my mind. Or if I did acknowledge it, then I'm like, okay, I guess I must be suicidal. I guess let me get the razor sharp and whatever. No, I'm just saying those thoughts have crossed my mind. And the fact that he put them in a rap song. Look, suicide is a taboo subject. It's not something that you could speak out loud. And that's why I have this podcast, because it's a conversation I would never entertain. Well, not with anybody. And me speaking it out loud is just, it's making it real. It's making it, look, I've already had this conversation with my therapist. So it's not, you know, this is not a cry for help. This is more of one. If you have had thoughts of committing suicide, if the thought has swum by your head and then left, it's normal. You're not going crazy. That's not the voice that's in your head. It's when you start acting on it. Look, I'm not a professional. I got to be careful. I'm not saying I'm a professional on this shit. This is me speaking personal experience and saying, yes, from what my entire life, it's frequent that I've my brain had thought about, look, fuck, suicidal thought. Before it was a song by Biggie, it was a thought that lingered in my head. And all the positive thinking in the world and all the, oh, think all the positive shit and all the Bible verses the world won't do shit about it. It was a thought. And the fact that he put it in a song just made it, I won't say acceptable, but I won't say I felt less weird about those thoughts. That's what I'm trying to say. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. And so about the title is the reason I went with, what did I say? A fucking Buddha head? A worthless Buddha head. A worthless fucking Buddha head. Let me watch this game. Fucking Buddha head. Needless to say, I'm going to censor that word when I put it in the title. Worthless fucking Buddha head. Yeah. The reason why, I remember the first time I heard, when I would hear it in the song, I used to think he would just say, I wish this fucking Buddha would hit. As like this weed would kick in so I could make suicide easier. But no, worthless fucking Buddha head is like perfect. The perfect title. Because you just, again, I'm not an expert on suicide. I'm just, this is shit that I've read. I'm just telling you. My own experience and shit that I've read about. So I want to make sure that I'm not speaking like an expert telling you, you know, fuck, if you do have thoughts about suicide, you know, sure, talk to someone. Actually, you know what? Let me just make sure that, hold on a second. I feel the need to public service announcement here. Last thing I need is someone committing suicide and the last thing they were listening to was my podcast. Right. So if you do have thoughts of talk suicide and you live in Canada, please call 1-833-456-4566 SMS. Or if you could text them at 45645, you know, like this someone, if you're trying to have a serious conversation about suicide, that's who you should talk to. Not this asshole on this podcast. Yo, shout out to the rapper Logic, because he's got a song about how he doesn't want to live, and then towards the end of the song, yes, okay, rapper Logic, let me just say, yeah, I feel like this is my version of his song about, no, that's not true, this is me just talking about my favorite track on Biggie Smalls album, which I know will raise a lot of flag, but it is what it is, man. I like the track, and I'll leave it at that. Fuck. See, the overly sensitive, the hypersensitive part in me, the empathetic part is like, I feel the need to justify having this conversation, and to the point where I realize I'm not making any points. Only point I'm making is, yeah. Suicidal Thought is one of my favorite track on, is definitely my favorite, or that one track by Biggie that stands out. It's, to me, that's his Dear Mama track. It's his Song Cry track. Like you know, it's that one track that for me, it's, I'm hearing the poem of a human being expressing, pouring out their soul to me. Before Suicidal Thought, I was considering making the title of this track Electrical Tape Around Your Daughter or Feed 'em Gunpowder. I was going to recite Warning, the track Warning, because that's more fun to do. Ain't No Killer, Trying to Play a Gorilla. Ain't No Killer, Trying to Play a Gorilla. Wait, what's the track called? Hold on a second. It goes, Unbelievable Biggie. I realize there's another point I'm trying to play gorilla when you ain't no killer. That's what he says. Trying to play a gorilla when you ain't no killer. And I did that without looking up the verse. Oh, sorry, that's loud. Trying to play a gorilla when you ain't no killer. Yeah. Remember that. But yeah, that nearly became the title of today's episode. I'm just giving you verses by Biggie that there's other verses I could have brought up. But these are the ones that stood out to me in the past few days while re-listening to some Biggie. And the last one is Suicidal Strapped. Now, that's not from Biggie. It's from Tupac. And the only reason I bring it up is because there is an article or a piece, a think piece or whatever, a document put out by the people of Freakonomics, and they go into the concept of suicide, how like they look at it as an idea, like they observe it, like it's long, it's an essay, 20-minute whatever, 20-minute listen, probably even longer, maybe an hour, but. There's a part where they talk about suicide in the African-American community and how suicide in the African community, you know, like even as prevalent as it is, may not look like the same way as white people. Like, you know, white people write a note. Okay, you know, I'm generalizing, right? Where the general idea of suicide, you think of suicide, you think of someone writes a note and then ends themselves. But they were saying how in the African community, suicidal person would be the dude who tells you shit like, I'm ready to die. Or like, I am going to engage in a fight, in an altercation with a rival gang when I'm outnumbered. You know that that track by Gangstar? It goes, gotta be the illest brother just to get respect. Where you do just crazy shit. Where you go on suicidal missions, right? Pick a fight with the rival gang and you make it out and you become a legend over that shit. I'm thinking of, you know what? Perfect example. People who make a living out of robbing drug dealers. Now, some people see it as, oh, you're just a crazy motherfucker. The other motivation might just be they're just suicidal. They're suicidal, but they don't want to do it they don't want to off themselves. They rather put themselves in dangerous situation where there's a high probability of them dying. So after reading that piece by Freakonomics, it just had me thinking of the whole concept or most of the concept in Biggie's album, Biggie and Pac. Biggie's album, Ready to Die. And Pac, when he says shit like, I'm suicidal strapped. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm ready to die. I want to die, but I don't want to do it myself. So I'm going to put myself in a situation where someone will do that for me. When I went into therapy, I think it was probably as close as I could get to that mindset. And I remember... There's a bit somewhere in there. It's like, you know, I came in there and was like, look, the good news is, the bad news is I'm suicidal. The good news is I'm willing to take some crackers with me. So what I want you to do is train me to help me find the courage to help me become heartless so I will carry on. Essentially, I want to spend the rest of my life becoming a suicide bomber. I didn't use those words. I mean, really, I'm being dramatic in my explanation, right? I didn't use those words, but my mindset was that close. And I remember just, you know, the look on my therapist's face is, it wasn't that dramatic, right? But when I replay this story, if I ever make a skit, if I ever make a movie about this portion of my life, yeah, it's going to be hella dramatic. And I'm going to exaggerate the look on my therapist's face and I'll be like, oh, wow, we got a lot of work to do. And, oh my God, yes, bringing up my therapist actually helps me transit. Segue to my next topic. In therapy, I think I went in there wishing I was a violent person. And by the end of therapy, like I'm still in, but one thing I realized or got to accept is making peace with the fact that I am not a violent person. I think the reason why, a second thought about why I enjoy Biggie's track is every once in a while there's some songs he says, there's some verses he recites, and it has me fantasizing about being a bad person, a cruel person, a heartless human being who doesn't feel empathy, who's not sensitive, who's not imprisoned by those feelings. Like a soldier, I guess. Yeah, like a soldier of the battlefield and doesn't allow himself to be it's fucked up. And I guess I'm realizing that I went into, and this is like toxic masculinity, growing up as a boy trying to be a man, I grew up with the notion that peaceful people are weak people. You know what I mean? People who use their words to get out of... Basically, I wasn't giving enough credit to people who make a living off diplomacy. Who, they're the reasons why countries aren't at war. Like, I didn't value that shit. To me, I learned to only value the soldiers. The Tony Soprano, the... one of the scene of The Sopranos from the first season is Christopher goes into a pastry shop and he's waiting in line and the dude makes, you know, he's taking a number and he's got to wait in line. And then, finally when it's his turn, the pastry owner tells him that, there's still another guy before you. And Chrissy takes it as a sign of disrespect. And he's pissed off. And, he gets into an argument. And then gets into an argument that turns out with him pulling out a gun. Because Chrissy was feeling disrespected. He pulls out a gun. It's meant to be an entertaining scene. And he shoots the clerk in his foot. And, fuck. Oh, my God. I'm going to act like, you know, you're a Soprano fan. And you know what scene I'm talking about. I love that scene. And I remember looking at it going, how is Chrissy the problem in this scene? Because he was feeling small. You know, if he went into therapy, he'd realize that, yeah, that dude, you in that moment, you felt small, right? And I guess the best way, but he felt small and he used a gun to make himself feel bigger. Which is a fucking handicap, which is a defect. Like it took some processing to realize that people aren't responsible for you feeling small. And using a weapon or violence to make yourself feel bigger. And I want to be careful. I'm not trying to say that, you know, violence isn't the key, isn't the answer. That's not what I'm trying to say. Fuck that. Violence would have kept us out of slavery, but that's another discussion. No, I'm not saying that fucking shit, that old bullshit. But I am saying just because, there we go, you are not one of those men who can tap into the one advantage that we have over women, which is to be violent, which is to be stronger. Just because you're not one of those men who can do that shit, who enjoy doing that shit, doesn't make you less than. That's the lesson that I learned. That's the takeaway. I know I need to be very careful to not, I'm not preaching to y'all. I'm just trying to Okay, let me put it this way. If I am preaching to you, if it sounds like I'm preaching to you, let me know. Because even I hate that shit. I'm just saying what I can say without any doubts. Like, old me would have rejected everything I just said about violence. But now that I'm maturing, that I'm realizing that violence ain't the only way. I saw Creed 3 for the second time. And there's a scene where Creed's Adonis, his spoiler alert. And it's not really, it's not a spoiler, but it's just a message that I want to share. Look, there's a scene where this might be a spoiler alert for Adonis. If you haven't seen Creed 3, I don't know what the fuck you're thinking about. I don't think it's a spoiler, but it's a scene. I'm going to mention a scene in the movie. And it's that scene where, if you need to log off, do your thing. Okay, so it's that scene where his daughter is in the middle of, Adonis's daughter is a cute, adorable actress. Amara, I think that's her name, is drawing something. And one of her classmates takes her drawing and rips it. And then she's pissed off and she goes to her and punches her. The next scene the next scene after that is Adonis and his wife, played by Tessie Thompson. Let me make sure I got that fine black woman's names properly. Tessie Thompson. I'm bad with actresses' name. I just say, yo, that person in the movie, Tessie Thompson. Make sure I got this. Tessa Thompson. There we go. Tessa Thompson. Yes. Okay, so they're talking to the teacher. And of course, Adonis's character is like, yo, what the fuck? Why is my daughter being reprimanded? Why the fuck is... And, basically thinking what I'm saying. It's like, what the fuck? Yo, she deserved to punch that bitch, her classmate, even her child. And Tessa Thompson, the wife, the mother, is like, you know, constantly trying to be like, no. Yes, we do teach our daughter to defend themselves, but we do understand that there are other ways besides violence to communicate, to communicate whatever she wanted to communicate with that punch, to communicate anger. And, that scene bothered me at first because I'm like, what the fuck? Roll to credit. What's the point of this scene? Adonis is right. That little bitch deserved what she got. And I guess they were trying to say that, it reminds me of this clip that I was listening to. Oh, I forgot. But basically, it's how to respond to aggression. Not react, respond to aggression. Like taking the time to acknowledge and the aggression that's been done to you, right? And then map out, like taking your time to figure out the appropriate response. Yes, sometimes the response is to whoop a motherfucker's ass. Sometimes, that's what it comes down to. I bring back slavery. But sometimes it's just, It's just use your words. I remember this time there was a time where I believed in, you call me the N-word and it's your ass. And I was walking down Rito Street, whatever, some like downtown. And this homeless dude drops the N-word on me. And I remember getting ready to kick him in his face because he was on the ground. He was on the ground and it was like a mental illness shit, whatever, man. Just like, he dropped the N-word, give me some money, some shit like that, whatever. And I remember getting ready to kick him in the face because he was on the ground, like I said, right? And it hit me. I was like, wait, this motherfucker's worse off than I am. One. Two, right. The calling me an N-word is what made me feel like, just made me feel small. And I wanted revenge for him doing that. But it's amazing in that moment realizing that what did I realize? I realized, my first thought was this motherfucker is worse off than I am. What the fuck? You calling me the N-word? How about you get yourself a job, motherfucker? It's like you're on the ground right now asking me for money. And I guess you must have failed how to ask for shit, but you dropping the N-word is not the way to go about it. But you failed. You're not getting shit out of me. Except a middle finger or a being ignored. But it was just one of those situations where I realized that, yes, I did feel small in that period of time and didn't feel the need to use violence in that particular situation. I don't know if I'm making sense. I know I'm making sense to my own self. This is, again, I'm thinking out loud. I know I'm making sense to my own self, but I don't think, yeah. Okay. All this to say, there's still a part of me that wishes that I could be those. Had the same reputation as Marlowe, the Marlowes, this fictitious Marlowe, or Omar from The Wire. But I just don't want to do the work to get that reputation. You know what I mean? And it brings me back to King Jong-un. I joke about how he's my favorite dictator, mainly because he doesn't have to worry about this shit. You make him feel small, you die. You know what I mean? I love that aspect of it. But problem is, in order to be a tyrant like him, is I got to watch my back. I got to worry about the motherfucker who's a bigger tyrant than me. Because I've been spending my time, it's funny, right? On the last episode, I was talking about the Duvaliers and how it's so, maybe, yeah. I was talking about the Duvaliers and how they spent their entire career as a dictator just fucking silencing opposition with violence, with intimidation, violence, and terror. Like, I get that, using that shit, because terror gets people to get in line. And yeah, it's funny. I admire that, but I'm realizing I'm not that. I never grew up with the idea of being a peaceful person, being a sensitive person, being someone who feels empathy. There was any power to that. But I am learning. I am learning. Which is why I'm going to end this final segment. This is another reminder of this final thought with this. It's called Fact About Being a Highly Sensitive Person by my favorite Instagram content creator. Content creator is Life by Alisa. I kept calling her Lisa, my apology, but it's Life by Alisa. And I like her content. I'm actually reading the book, The Highly Sensitive Men. Is that what it's called? The book is right behind me. Actually, let me just look on my, let me make sure I get the right title. It's called The Highly Sensitive Man, Finding Strength in Sensitivity by Tom Falkenstein. I'm enjoying this journey, you know, making peace with the fact that I'm a hypersensitive male. Because it's an unpopular trait. Like I just said, I spent my entire journey as a boy, growing up as a man, believing that to be a real man, you gotta be you gotta be like Biggie talking about electrical tape around your daughter. You gotta be the guy who shows up, showing up at the wake to make sure it's not a motherfucking fake. You gotta be ruthless in that shit, believing that you needed to be that, even though I had none of those traits. Needless to say, it caused me a lot of distress, you know. I'm told to be one thing, but I had nothing about it. Nothing that way. So I'm on this journey. I'm making peace with the fact that I am a sensitive, hypersensitive person. And there is power in being a hypersensitive person. It doesn't sound like it, even just saying it. I'm still trying to get myself to believe it. It's a fucking journey, man. It's a journey. It's not... Rome wasn't built in one day. Is that the expression? Yeah, it's a journey of unlearning. Like it's funny. At the beginning of this podcast, it's probably the one thing I haven't made peace with. I'm still struggling to make peace with is the fact that I'm a hypersensitive human being. So I'm going to end this segment with just this thought that by Life by Alisa. And she just shares her thought about... So many people still have no idea that being a highly sensitive person is actually a real thing. So, yeah, here we go. Okay, hold on. Refresh. Wish there was a way. Okay, here we go.
Share the facts about what it means to...
Refresh.
Share the facts about what it means to be a highly sensitive person. So, high sensitivity has been around forever, but the term highly sensitive person, otherwise known as HSP, has only been around since 1991. So, that term was actually coined by the researcher and psychotherapist Dr. Elaine Aaron, and the scientific term for this trait is sensory processing sensitivity. So it's important to note that being a highly sensitive person is a trait. It's not something that needs to be diagnosed. It's not a disorder. It's not something you overcome. I always compare it to being like an introvert or an extrovert. Some of us are just more highly sensitive. And being highly sensitive is not just about being emotionally sensitive. It's not just about crying all the time and being upset. Not at all. Highly sensitive people simply have nervous systems that are more sensitive than the people around them. So we will get overwhelmed more easily. We'll get flustered if people ask us to do a lot in a short period of time. We also are going to be more sensitive to our environments. So we're going to be the people who notice that bright light or that weird noise or that scent in the room. We might be particular about what fabrics we wear or very sensitive to itchy tags. We also have an abundance of empathy. We actually have more active mirror neurons in our brains, which are responsible for empathy. So we understand how people feel. Being highly sensitive is really, really cool. Okay, so I just want to share the facts about...
All right, yeah. The piece started with, I just want to share the facts about being a highly sensitive person. And hearing her talk, it reminded me of actually the real reason, drama aside, why I went into therapy. It's because I was starting to feel like being hypersensitive, a hypersensitive person, meant that there was a disorder in my brain. Something was wrong. And because I was thinking about how cruel this fucking world was and how I just couldn't get over it. I couldn't snap out of it. And like I couldn't equate the necessary rage. Like I couldn't formulate the proper rage to respond to this cruel. Like I was paralyzed by empathy, by sensitivity, and like I felt like it was a handicap. And the book Highly Sensitive Man by Tom Falkenstein, he talks about like, yo, most of his patients are men, dudes who come in his office with that exact same thought. It's like, hey, doc, I'm tired of being a bitch-ass nigga. Fix me up. And the whole session is him making you comfortable with the fact that you're a bitch-ass nigga. And I know. Okay, at some point, I'm going to start using the term bitch to describe, you know, being a highly sensitive person. Again, I'm unlearning, right? And it's a fucking journey. That's all I'm trying to say. If you're a man and you're hypersensitive, it's a fucking journey into self-acceptance. If you're a man, started out at peace with the fact that you were hypersensitive, holy shit, shout out to your parents, shout out to your environment. I don't know. You know what I mean? You are like a one in a million type of situation. But for the rest of us, yeah, it's a fucking journey. With that said, this finally concludes our episode. You know what? This is one of the episodes where I feel where I said what I needed to say, and I feel good. Feel good. Feel good. Feel good. Feel good. All right. All right. This concludes today's episode. Holler at me on Twitter. Hey, apparently there was an article I meant to read that I meant to share but didn't have a chance to, about how Twitter be fucking up. And yeah, man, not to Twitter, but Elon Musk be fucking up. And it's only a matter of time before those doors close. And my account, I wonder what he's going to do with all that data. Fuck. I should back that shit up. Anyway, whatever, man. Yeah, holler at me on Twitter at bblizzak or at Shut Up Podcast. I got two Twitter accounts. You can reach me at either or. Website is Shut Up. I don't know why my nose is fucking blocked. Anyways, website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Hey, holler at me if you're a hypersensitive person, especially if you're a hypersensitive male going through it. Because essentially when I think about it, this podcast is for us. Is for us. I'm just trying to, yeah, it's for us. Yeah, so shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Subscribe using the RSS feed on the website or go to Google or Apple Podcasts. Yo, seriously, thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. Ha! Peace.